On this episode of Monmouth Weekly, University President Patrick Leahy discusses the most up-to-date plans for the upcoming fall semester and how it impacts students, faculty, and staff. This is faculty member Matt Harmon, and it's time for episode 14. Thanks, as always, for joining us. With the start of the semester, strangely enough, the fall semester that is, about 2 months away, good opportunity to get us back up and going. This is our Monmouth Weekly podcast. I'm faculty member Matt Harmon with University President Patrick Leahy. We are in the early to mid part here of July. The summer classes are up and going, but news coming out just a day or so ago about Monmouth potentially reopening in the fall. I say good morning to President Leahy. Hope and trust, sir, that you had a successful and fun 4th of July holiday. I know very different feel than it would normally be with fireworks and festivities, but hope all is well with you and the family. Let's start it with that.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Everything's well here. It was a different 4th of July. The first time since I can remember that I did not spend it at our family home in Avalon. So that for me was very different, but all good. It's all good.
Let's, before we even jump into the fall, and I know that's the news that everybody wants to hear a little bit more and talk about a little bit more. I mentioned summer classes up and going. I think a couple of the sessions are either close to wrapping up or wrapping up pretty soon based on the calendar. What's been maybe the overall feel and sense of how the summer schedule has been working?
The feedback I'm getting is it's been very positive. As you know, the activity was very robust this summer. That was good. I'm hearing very positive things from our faculty members, some of whom had already planned to offer online courses, Matt, others of whom converted coursework online. I think that has gone well. The most important thing for me is I'm hearing positive things from students about their experiences this summer. And so I believe that, you know, remote delivery of programming in the summer is here to stay because it's a great way for us to serve students the way they want to be served in the summer. So I think our summer sessions are going very, very well.
And I would say after much debate and deliberation, the idea of getting a comprehensive plan in terms of getting the fall semester back up and going. And as you say in your email that came out midweek, as we record here on Thursday, was released yesterday, talking about a return to campus in the fall. And I'll start right there. A return to campus means hopefully things continue to move in a good and solid direction, and students, faculty, staff, administration will actually be back on campus come September.
That is the goal. You know, after months of scenario planning and considering all the different options and waiting anxiously for the guidelines from the state of New Jersey, I mean, that was the most important piece of information we were awaiting. We did receive those guidelines a couple weeks ago, and it took us a couple weeks to make sure that we could develop a plan that met the not only the letter of those guidelines, but the spirit of those guidelines. We were able to announce yesterday that if everything holds, and maybe we can talk about that as well, but if everything holds in the state and we continue to make progress toward a reopening, then we will be able to reopen in the fall, bring students back to campus, not only to study with us, but to live with us, and to bring our faculty and staff back to serve them. Certainly in a different way. I believe the language I used, Matt, was significantly modified in-person experience. It's going to be considerably different than the experience our students left in March. But I think everybody understands that. And we're going to do the best we can to integrate two things, Matt. One is, on the one hand, our most important priority, which is doing everything we can to ensure the health, safety, and well-being of all of our constituents, that is faculty, staff, and students, as well as integrate that into what we know to be the desire of the majority of our students, and I think the majority of our faculty and staff, which is to be able to come back and to return to the campus and to return to some semblance of normalcy. And you put those two together, integrating those two sometimes competing demands has been really tricky. But I think we landed on a plan that does just that.
I know in your email, as a lot of these emails have, and they make them somewhat easier to probably go through and read, one of the first things that you talk about is the safeguarding, screening, and testing. And I would imagine that's something that was debated quite heavily. How are you going to make sure that things are clean? How are you going to make sure that, if needed, temperature checks are done? Sanitizing stations are there. I know Governor Murphy just this past week announced that face coverings are required when social distancing is not possible. So all of that is kind of part of that plan. To your point, it will make coming back to campus normal, but not really normal in a lot of ways, if that makes sense.
Yeah, this is general safeguarding. I mean, this is like what's going to happen across the entire campus in every activity, Matt. And that is we have to mask up. Absolutely required indoors, absolutely required outdoors where social distancing isn't possible. So we had this embedded into our plans even before the governor's announcement yesterday that he's going to make this the case across the state. We will be subject to that 6 feet social distancing. That is been a little bit of a point of discussion because quite candidly, in the state of New Jersey, that is a requirement for colleges and universities, but that is not a requirement in New York, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut. I think the guidelines for the colleges and universities in those states suggest that it's where necessary or where possible or where practicable. You know, here it's an absolute requirement, which reduces our capacity in the classrooms, and we can talk about that. But you know, we embrace the spirit of that. It certainly seems as though the evidence suggests that that's a good way to prevent the spread of this virus, and we'll comply with it. So there's a couple things that are going to be embedded everywhere that are going to make a return to campus feel a lot different than normal. In addition to that, we have to be really savvy about identifying symptoms. So we're going to have a mechanism in place where all of our constituents can self-identify symptoms through a questionnaire that they need to fill out every single day. But in addition to that, we will have places around campus where in order to gain access, you must go through a temperature check. Another way for us to try to identify symptoms. Anytime a symptom is identified, that person will immediately be referred to our health services for a formal test. And then that testing process begins. So we wanted to start our announcement with, these are the general safeguarding practices that we're going to adopt on our campus. And it's very consistent with what our state has adopted off campus.
You know, when you think of it, a couple of things there just to follow up in terms of the testing, that would be something that students and faculty and staff, they could get done on campus. That I just wanted to clarify that one, excuse me, moving forward, that students wouldn't necessarily have to leave or staff wouldn't have to leave if they wanted to get a test. That type of procedure will be able to be done at the health center?
Yes. In fact, we are partnered up with our testing company. They've assured us that there'll be plenty of tests available. So all folks have to do is go to our health center and get that test. Now, the test at this point takes a day or two because this is the full test. This is not one of those sort of quick tests. You know, this is the full test. And during the time at which that test is being processed, we will have to ask ask individuals to go back to their dorm rooms if they're a student in quarantine, or to work from home over the next day or two if they're a staff member, until we get the results of that test. And then if a student test comes back positive, we will isolate that student per state guidelines for the 14-day period to ensure that we can minimize the spread of the virus. So I'm not suggesting in any way this is going to be simple, but we have studied the guidelines very closely and have a plan in place that meets them.
Let's talk a little bit from a student perspective about the housing options. All of the residence halls, I'm assuming, and I say assuming, you can certainly correct me if I'm not on the same page, will be open. But will it be as normal? Would it be two students in a room, or in particular situations, the suites, the apartments, where they would be more, or are housing numbers going to be modified a little bit for the fall?
They'll be modified. I mean, the guideline states, Matt, that we cannot operate our residence halls at full capacity. It does not say it has to be at 50% capacity or 75%. It just says that we must ensure that we're spreading out students as much as feasible, and that we can't be running at capacity. So with that in mind, we took all the housing contracts that we typically have with incoming first-year students and upper-class students. And, you know, we had to reorient them a little bit around our available supply of rooms. But in doing so, we can both honor all the contracts that we have and comply with the state guideline that we should not be operating at full capacity. In fact, I think once we spread everybody around, we're at like immediately at 83% capacity. We believe that, you know, some students, when they hear about our opening plan, might choose not to take that housing contract. So that will further reduce our capacity. So the good news here is that we will allow students to live together. We'll do less of that, but there will be cases where students can live together. It's just that they have to be subject to the enhanced cleaning protocols and some of the other restrictions that we have to put in place. For example, this fall, if you're living on campus, you can't just go over to your friend's residence hall, another residence hall, as a visitor. That will not be allowed. You can't gather up three or four, five students and go down to the common area, even in your residence hall. Those common areas will be closed. So we'll comply with the state mandates around those restrictions, but we will be allowed to house multiple students in certain rooms. So the good news for us is we don't have to make this really tough decision around who gets to come back to campus and who doesn't get to come back. We can accommodate everyone. We'll put it out to the students and their families. And if they are comfortable, we can accommodate them.
When you think of it from a perspective of there are several students among the Monmouth population that would live off campus, some students within the surrounding area would live at home. If everything's being done on campus the proper way, how does the school monitor or give guidelines for students who might live in off-campus housing? I'm just thinking of potential problems down the line when you think of it. You couldn't necessarily monitor every possible student that would live off campus. On campus, yeah, you can kind of set guidelines and monitor. Is it more of suggested protocol for students who might live off campus?
Yes. You're right in pointing out, Matt, that the risks go up off campus. Obviously, we cannot control activity off campus, you know, the way we can try to manage that on campus. So there are risks there. Every single student this fall who comes back to Monmouth University will have to go through what we're calling a COVID-19 orientation or training program that will talk in very explicit terms about the protocols that we have in place, the safety measures that they will be required, not suggested, but required to adhere to. We will share with them quite candidly, Matt, that repeated problems with complying with those guidelines will result in student code of conduct violations. This is how seriously we need to take this. We've said all along, this is going to have to be a shared commitment by the university doing everything it can to ensure that this is a safe and responsible return, but also with each individual constituent of the university, that is each student, each faculty member, each staff member, frankly, each visitor to the campus must adhere to the same commitment around protecting each other. And so we'll do everything we can to train up our constituents to make them party to the protocols that we have in place. This questionnaire that they're going to need to fill out. If you live off campus, you have to fill out this questionnaire every single day. In some cases, you might have to show that you've completed it to your professor before they'll let you into their classroom. You'll have to go through the temperature checks before you gain access to the Stafford Center or to the Great Hall. So it's going to be a comprehensive plan to try to manage what we know will be some risks come the fall.
I know that this week some of the student athletes, football, I believe, is back on campus. As you start to see maybe a little bit more activity, I'm sure it brings you, in one way, joy to see students back on campus, in this particular case, student athletes, but probably nervous as well, because as you stated earlier, there is still 2 months to operate under these guidelines with the hope that things in the state continue to get better. You go from stage 2 to stage 3, which has to happen for any of this planning to take place. In a way, you're, I would think, right, keeping your fingers crossed that this plan that was announced yesterday can actually be implemented.
Yeah, you're right about those conflicting emotions of joy and enthusiasm on the one hand and continued worry on the other hand. This past week, as you point out, we started inviting back to campus on a voluntary basis our first students since March. And that is members of our football team who were invited back for voluntary workouts to start the process of preparing for a fall season. We also this week hosted our first camps on campus. That is for the youngsters, I think like 8 to 14 years old, sports camps. And we were able to do that. The state allowed it. And we wanted to offer those opportunities, not only for the kids, but also for their parents who are trying to find really valuable ways to keep the kids entertained this summer. So that activity has started this past week, and I'm really pleased about that. But you're absolutely right. It comes with some worry. You point out quite rightly that we are in stage 2 of the state's reopening plan. And stage 2 allows those activities that I just mentioned. But the fall opening plan that I rolled out yesterday is predicated on our state moving through stage 2 and into stage 3. When we put the plans together starting, weeks ago, we had real confidence that we were moving from stage 1 and then to stage 2. And that we were progressing positively through stage 2. And the governor was giving us the heads up that it's, we'll be moving to stage 3. You know, with some of his recent decisions around indoor dining and the compulsory mask wearing outside, it seems like we might be stuck in stage 2 for a little while. This whole plan is predicated on the end of August and early September, getting to stage 3. So we're going to have to continue to watch that very carefully.
The idea of all of the, I'll say, additional measures, I'm sure there's a cost that gets associated with this. Is it a cost that Monmouth incurs as an institution? Is it a cost that the state helps with anything, or the federal government, or is it on Monmouth because it's essentially Monmouth's choice to reopen?
It is. Well, let's put it this way: it's a significant cost, but it's a small price to pay in the big picture, because we know that we have families and students who want to come back to campus. So we'll do everything we can to make that possible and make whatever investments we have to make to do so. Those costs will be borne by Monmouth University. Our hope is that the federal government might come back with another round of support for higher education. If that's possible, then maybe we can get reimbursed for some of those costs. But right now, it's money that we are committing to the process to try to get back to a safe, responsible, modified reopening.
Faculty member Matt Harmon with University President Patrick Leahy. This is episode number 14 of Monmouth Weekly, trying to keep you updated on all of the information involving campus. This episode obviously focusing on the potential plans of Monmouth getting back to campus and opening in the fall. President Leahy, we've talked a little bit about the potential testing and the guidelines that go along with it. Some housing news as well that you mentioned. What about things from a student perspective of if you're in a club, how are they going to eat? All of those things that involve kind of the everyday campus environment.
They will be available. It's just that they'll be available in a modified format. Dining, for example, of course, if we're going to have students living with us, we want to make sure that they're well nourished. So we've been partnering up with our dining services company to ensure that we can, take good care of all of our residential students, but do it in a way, once again, that complies with state guidelines. So most of the eating on campus will be done first through a mobile ordering app. So instead of coming to the cafeteria and just having your, walking through the lines and picking up whatever you'd like, we're going to ask students to go to an app and to actually order their meal. And the meal will be prepared individually and customized for every student and be available to be picked up, say, 20 minutes later. This model is a model that I think we'll have to implement to comply with this public health situation. But I've warned our food service partners, Matt, that this is likely something that will last, because it sounds like a great way to serve students going forward. Once students pick up their meals, they will be in stage two, invited only to eat outside. But assuming we get to stage three, there will be both outside options and indoor seating. But that indoor seating, once again, is going to have to be limited by our social distancing requirements. So it will be a different experience this fall, even in the dining, which is such an important part of the experience. I get that. I mean, so much community is built at a college campus around meals, and those friendships that last a lifetime are built around meals. So, we'll do the best we can to offer that experience within the guidelines.
Based off of some of the faculty emails that I've received over the course of the last couple of days, it does seem from a student perspective and a faculty perspective that the mode of delivery could be varied from class to class. Some may be in class, some may be fully online, the hybrid option. And it's not all that different than all of those offerings being done from semester to semester. But I think the variety of classes that students would have to pick from, I think this semester more so than any other, will probably be much more different, in that there will likely be more hybrid online options than there normally are in a normal fall type semester.
Much more variety this fall than ever before. And I think for good reason. I mean, we're trying to do a couple things here, Matt. The first is, we want our faculty members to retain the right to decide how it is best to deliver programming to their students this fall. And so we want to make sure that our faculty members feel safe being back on campus and engage with students again. That's our primary concern. We also know that because of some of the social distancing requirements that we're going to have, it's going to reduce our capacity in classrooms, and it's going to force some courses in the hybrid models or really dispersed learning. I want our faculty members to make the choice as to whether they can deliver programming best in person or in a really first-class online fashion. Of course, they know best how to deliver programming to our students. I also know, though, that there are faculty members who realize that the best way to serve students is to do it in person, even if we are subject to some of these public health constraints, especially if you are involved in science courses and art courses and communications courses and a whole host of courses where that in-person really is required. So what we've talked about is this fall, we'll have three different types of courses. We will have in-person courses. We'll still be able to accommodate our faculty members who want to teach in person. We'll have a lot of hybrid courses where, because of various constraints, some of the course will be offered in person and some will be offered in a remote fashion. And then we'll have some degree of program of courses that are 100% online. And I feel very confident that because of the work that our faculty have done over the course of the summer to even enhance the excellent work that they did in the spring, that we're going to be able to offer really first-class online programming as well. So I feel like we're going to have a mix of programs, a mix of courses and classes to offer to our students, which gives our students as much flexibility as we can offer them, Matt. I mean, what we're going to do is have the schedule set at the end of this month, and then let our students go in, check their schedule, see how the mix of courses has fallen out. And if they don't like it, there's too much online or there's too much in person or whatever, we'll have an opportunity to try to move those students into other courses to be as accommodating as possible to as many of our students as possible. And we think that that's been the way we've rolled since the beginning of this pandemic, is to try to be as student-centered as possible. And I think our academic delivery this fall will be just the latest evidence of that.
When you think of it, one of the other pieces of the email with the information that you delivered yesterday to the campus community, the academic calendar, which, you know, every school seems to be doing it a little bit different. A lot of schools have said, let's get to Thanksgiving and then probably not have students come back. As of right now, the academic calendar for Monmouth will stay through December as it normally would, with the ability to adjust at any point, I'm sure, really during the course of the fall semester.
You know, we thought about this long and hard. We went through a lot of different scenarios here as well. You're hearing other institutions that are starting early so that they can finish the entire calendar by Thanksgiving, or at least making decisions about whether they're going to empty out the campus at Thanksgiving. All that remains on the, let me back up. We are starting on September 8th because for a variety of reasons, we have to start the day after Labor Day. And so our academic calendar will go from September 8th to December 22nd. The question that still remains is, can we have students, faculty, and staff on campus for that entire period of time? Other institutions, as you know, have already declared that come Thanksgiving, they will empty out the campus and finish the semester online. Our thinking was simply, Matt, that why make that decision right now? All along, we've tried to push decisions to as close to the time that we have to make them as possible, so that we can take a read on the public health information at that time. If I make a decision right now that we're going to go remote after Thanksgiving, that's going to be based on what I think might happen in the fall. And what I'd like to do is hold on that decision until we can get information so that I know what's happening in the fall, if that makes sense. So it's on the table still. And I said in my message that we'll make a decision around sending students home at Thanksgiving by November 1st, which we think gives them plenty of time to adjust their schedules. It gives our faculty members plenty of time to adjust their last weeks of the academic calendar. But we think it's still the prudent thing to do to say our calendar's running. If we're going to try to have a modified in-person experience, let's offer that experience until we can't offer that experience. And we won't know that until we get well into the semester.
Let's finish with this one, as our normal kind of half hour is coming to a close. You have a couple of your own children that are in two different institutions. When you think of how everybody else is doing it, not saying that Monmouth is following anybody's model, because I know the decisions are being made independent. But when you hear probably news from your daughter's school, when you see Rutgers make an announcement that things essentially will be online during the course of the semester, how difficult is it for you, the rest of the administration, those on the task force of having Monmouth come back? How difficult is it for you to, I'll say it, sleep at night thinking, are we making the right decision as opposed to what anybody else is doing?
We watch closely what everyone else does, just to get a read on how it might inform our thinking. But we don't feel like we have to do what other schools are doing. We make decisions that we think are in the best interest of our constituents here at Monmouth University. And so we don't want to be totally out of market, but we want to be leaders in our own way. I see what Princeton has suggested and what Rutgers has suggested, and they probably have constraints that we don't have, perhaps, Matt. So I saw that they're going 100% remote, and I think that maybe that they have their reasons for deciding to do that. We have constantly decided to make decisions based on the public health guidance that we've been given. The New Jersey State guidelines from the Secretary of Higher Education came down. We, as I said, we unpacked them. They are the most stringent, we believe, higher ed guidelines in the country. So if we take those, follow the letter of those and the spirit of those guidelines and develop a plan, which we have, we think that we are integrating the interests of many of our students to come back on campus and the health, safety, and well-being of all of those constituents. I just believe it's we're doing the best thing for our particular institution. And we had a conversation at great length just yesterday with our Board of Trustees about this. I wanted to make sure that I spoke with them, rolled out our plan in advance with them to make sure that they were comfortable. And when we talked through it, we decided that right now, this seems like the most responsible, safe, and competitive reopening that we can offer. So I'm really pleased that our board has been as supportive as they have been. Incidentally, if I may, on a separate topic, something happened here at Monmouth over the last couple weeks since we were together. Last, Matt, which I think is historic, and I don't want it to get lost. And it does relate to our Board of Trustees. On July 1st, we had new board leadership here at Monmouth. And for the first time in our 87-year history, we have a female board chair. And I'm really proud of that. And I'm really proud of Gina Piscatelli, who is a Monmouth alum herself. And she is now taken over as the chair of our board, ran that meeting yesterday that I just referenced. And it represents the first time in our history that we have a female chair. So I just think that is really worthy of comment.
And some new board members as well. Certainly something that we can talk about at a later episode and have some guests hop back on. We haven't done that in the last couple episodes as well. President Leahy, I know you have a call that you have to jump on. I appreciate your time as always. Great information. Hopefully everything continues to go according to plan and the campus slowly, surely, and safely starts to reopen. Sir, enjoy the rest of your day and your weekend coming up.
Thank you, Matt. And I do look forward to continuing our collaboration. As we've talked about today, things are likely to continue to change even throughout this summer. So I think it's important that we continue at least with our biweekly visits so that we can keep the community as updated as possible. So my thanks to you for your efforts here.
Episode number 14 comes to a close. It is Monmouth Weekly for University President Patrick Leahy, faculty member Matt Harmon, saying thanks for listening to us. As always, we'll talk to you coming up real soon with episode 15. Stay safe, everyone.